Hello, good morning. Today is a beautiful day, and it is the fast of Esther. Now, usually the fast of Esther is the day before Purim, but this year's setup is a unique setup, whereas the fast of Esther is actually Thursday and Purim is only Saturday night, Sunday, because the day before Purim is Shabbat, and there's only two fasts. We have seven fasts in the Jewish calendar. There's only two of them that we can actually have on Shabbat. If it, well, actually, no, only one of them. I'm sorry. Only one of them that we would have on Shabbat, and that is Yom Kippur. If Yom Kippur falls on Shabbat, we still fast. Otherwise, we have an obligation to eat and drink on Shabbat. We're not even allowed to fast. There's a big question that people have, and that is many people who go to synagogue, they go Shabbat morning, and the synagogue is actually not finished until midday. And fasting also includes the midday. And so someone would have to drink in the morning, have a coffee or something before they go to synagogue, so they're not considered fasting because we're not allowed to fast on Shabbat. So because we're not allowed to fast on Shabbat, the solution to these what we call minor fasts, which the fast of Esther is a minor fast, is that we just prespone it. I just made up that word, I think. We prespone it. Instead of postpone it, we prespone it. We, instead of it being the day before, we put it on Thursday. Why? Because we don't want to put it on Friday because you got to get ready for Shabbat. And it's the, you know, it's problematic because how are you going to end the fast? You have to end the fast on Shabbat. So therefore, we put it on Thursday. So today is the fast of Esther. And I love these setups because usually what happens is you're fasting all day, and then you have to wait until after the reading of the Megillah in order to eat. And that reading of the Megillah on Purim night is just like this, like feeling of I just want to eat, just get through it fast. And I hope that this year we can listen and read the scroll of Esther in a very, very special way because we're not worried about eating. So I want to go over today a little bit of the background behind the fast of Esther, behind the story. I don't think I'll be able to get through even a fraction of what I'd like to get through today, but I want to get through a little bit of a feeling. So just to give you the backdrop for the story of Purim, when did this happen? This happens in between, right? Not long after the destruction of the first temple. There was a 70-year period, 72-year period, I believe, in between the two temples. So there's a short window. Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylonia. He and his army destroy the first temple. His son, Belshazzar, takes over the throne. Now, what's interesting to talk about is, and really, if you set the backdrop properly for this story, there's something about the superstition. There's a prophecy from Jeremiah that 70 years after the Jewish people are dispersed from the temple destroyed, and the Jewish people are dispersed, that they're going to come back and rebuild the temple. And if you were a megalomaniac leader, or a dictator at that time, the worst thing you wanted is someone to take over your throne. And so there was a lot of superstition around this prophecy, when that would happen. Was it from the time that Nebuchadnezzar reigned? Was it from the time of destruction of a temple? There was a whole debate, and people didn't know when that 70 years was going to come up. And because of that, a lot of different things happened in the story of Purim and kind of lay the ground for the story, for the framework, because of this superstition and because of the worry of the leaders that the Jewish people were going to usurp them and take over their throne. So the story that we're going to talk about today begins in ancient Persia. We're talking 4th century BCE. The Holy Temple had stood in Jerusalem. It was the glory years, the years of Solomon, 40 years of reign, and the temple is destroyed. It ends up being that the Persians take over the Babylonians, and now the Jewish people are subject to the Persian Empire. Now, initially the Persian Empire that started off with King Cyrus, he wanted to rebuild and started rebuilding the temple. 50 years after the temple was destroyed, King Cyrus started rebuilding it. He reigned for about a year. And when King Ahasuerus, which literally means hollow in the head, that's the term that the term of endearment that the Megillah uses for him, because obviously he was a special character, and as many leaders are, especially dictators are, he was a unique character. And so King Ahasuerus, he ascends the Persian throne, and he does something that his father-in-law did. So he actually, he is the descendant of the Persian throne, and he marries Vashti, who is the daughter of Belshazzar, who was the Babylonian king, who was, she's the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the temple. So look, we have the Persians and the Babylonians that now join together. This is a beautiful marriage, and the Persia now is the superpower of the world. He decides to throw a big party. And these guys partied. It wasn't just going to be a small party, a 180-day long party. And it was extravagant. Extravagant. Not only was there a party for the men, but Vashti, she threw her own party. On the seventh day of this party, Ahasuerus was drunk as can be. And he commands his wife Vashti to appear before all the partying men to show her exquisite beauty. There's a rated PG version and a rated R version. You can assume in what state they wanted her to show up in. The rated R version, which is what really happened. She had no desire to go there. A lot of people talk about Vashti and agency. There's other things that went on there as well. And she is actually executed. Now, the person who tells Ahasuerus to execute her is an advisor to the king, unknown at the time. His name is Haman. And later he becomes the focal point of the Purim story. He is a descendant of the tribe of Amalek and has an absolute, if you want to talk about anti-Semitism, he was raised and nurtured in an unbelievable Jew hatred. Though, according to many opinions, Ahasuerus himself wasn't a big fan of the Jews, and some people say he was even more, had more hatred of the Jews than Haman did. Ahasuerus wakes up in the morning, doesn't know what to do. Oh no, I killed my wife. I need a new wife. And so they create a beauty contest. People can come. This is the kids' version. The adult version of this is that there was a heron, and each of the women that would come would spend one night with the king. And once you were one night with the king, that means that you couldn't be with anyone else, and you would stay there for the rest of your life. And there was hundreds of women that were subject to this. And there was no one that found, as the Megillah says, favor in the king's eyes, until they found a young woman. Now, the leader of the Jewish people at the time lived in Shushan. Shushan was the capital of the Persian Empire. His name was Mordechai. Mordechai, we don't know if it's either a first cousin or a niece who was orphaned as a young girl. And Mordechai raised her and treated her as a daughter. And she had absolutely no desire to be the queen. And she's forcibly taken to the king's harem to participate in this contest. And while all the other contestants beautified themselves with perfumes and lotions to try to ingratiate the king, Esther did nothing. She had no desire to be with the king. But God had a different plan, and this is the beginning of the miracle of Purim, is that the king immediately liked Esther, and Esther becomes the new queen of Persia. And as per Mordechai's directive, he said to her before she left, her name was really Hadassah. Esther means hidden in Persian. And he said, and this was very controversial if you think about today, how proud we are to be Jews. But Mordechai says to Esther, do not tell anyone you're Jewish. And this is a key component to what later will become the story of how the Jewish people are saved. There's another interesting component in the story, and that is right after Esther becomes queen, Mordechai's at the gates, and he hears two guards discussing a plot to assassinate the king. Now, the strange thing is they're discussing it in a language called Tarshish. Mordechai knew 70 languages, so he understood what they were saying. What's fascinating is they see Mordechai at the gate. They say, some Jew, he probably doesn't know what we're saying. And they're able to talk about the assassination. It's like two Secret Service agents talking about assassinating the president. And then Mordechai overhears them. Why would they do it in public is really strange. But anyway, they get hanged. There's 14 people who get hanged in the story of Purim. They're the first two. And they were hanged as traitors. And what does Ahasuerus do as a gift for Mordechai? You think he saved his life. What does he do? He writes him down in the book. That's his gift to Mordechai. Writes him down in the book. Mordechai saves king's life. Thank you very much. I don't know if like every city has a book and you can get your name in the book. I don't know what's so special about that, but it becomes very special later in the story. Meanwhile, Haman was promoted to the position of prime minister. He was an unbelievable Jew hater. He came from many, many Jew haters. And immediately after his promotion, the king issues a decree that everyone has to bow down whenever Haman appeared. And Haman would walk around with a large idol hanging on a chain around his neck. And Mordechai the Jew, because of idolatry and the prohibition of the second commandment, he refused to bow down to Haman. There was other reasons also. There's a backstory between Haman and Mordechai that we can get into at a different time about them being in a desert and Mordechai selling Haman water. In return, Haman was a slave. It's a whole fascinating. The Midrash has the two of them had a backstory. And Haman was infuriated, and he resolved to take revenge against all the Jews. And he went to determine what would be a lucky day. Because he wanted to, again, the people then were superstitious. The same way all the dictators were worried about this prophecy of Jeremiah about the 70 years and the Jews coming back. They were worried about the Jewish people were considered a very spiritual and mystical people, and they were worried to mess with them, especially after the Jewish people actually, right before this, were the empire of the world. And many people, including Ahasuerus, remembers as his childhood, remembers living through the time when the Jewish people were the empire. They were the temple was just destroyed. These are all the first generation of the destruction of the temple. So this was really, really, really important for them. He wanted to make sure there was the right day. And the lot falls out in the month of Adar. And it falls out on the 13th day. And they said it's probably a really good day because Moses died. The great leader of the Jewish people died in Adar. What they didn't realize is that Moses was also born in Adar. Actually, the same day Moses died, the 7th of Adar, was the same day he was born, 120 years. He lived exactly 120 years. In any case, this was the lucky day. This was the time that was chosen. And Haman goes to Ahasuerus and offers him 10,000 silver talents in exchange for permission to exterminate the Jews. What's fascinating is he says, this is the example that the Talmud gives. He says, you have a mound and I have a pit. Like as if like this is perfect symbiotic relationship here. Ahasuerus is no friend of the Jews. He says, the money's yours to keep. Do with them as you please. Oh, Haman was all excited. He sends proclamations over all the lands, and he says that the following 13th of Adar is going to be the day that the Jewish people are going to be killed. Everyone, get your swords ready. Get ready for battle. Mordechai becomes aware of the decree, and he starts mourning. He dons sackcloth, and he tears his garments, and he sends a message to Esther. And what he sends is some of the most powerful, powerful words. He makes two pleas to Esther. He says, number one, if
we'll be back after a quick break.
Are you tired of swiping right on every dating app out there and still getting nowhere?
Are you convinced that you'll forever be alone, surrounded by nothing but cats and empty takeout containers?
Hi, I'm Aliza Ben Shalom, the host of the new show, Jewish Matchmaking, which you can find on Netflix.
And I'm the love rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Bernath, and we're inviting you to join us for Matchmaker Matchmaker.
Each week, we'll answer one of your pressing relationship questions, from how to get over your ex to how to deal with your partner's annoying habits.
So if you're ready to laugh, cry, or maybe even find love, then tune in to Matchmaker Matchmaker, and it's available now wherever you listen to your podcasts.
He said, I want you to go to Ahasuerus and tell him that this is your people, and I want him to spare your people. And he's the first thing he says to her, I'm just starting to remember from memory, is you are also one of us. Don't think you are going to be not killed. They're going to find out you're Jewish. And they're going to kill you too. So this is, he first appeases to her sense of you're one of us. And then he says something so powerful. This is the first time we see this anywhere in all of Tanakh. This is the last book of Tanakh. This is the last written book of Tanakh, because it was written after the destruction of the temple. There was a big debate whether or not it should be put into the Tanakh, into the holy writings. But it was put in. It was the last book put in. And he says, perhaps this is the reason why you became queen. He says, if you're going to be silent, relief, salvation will come to the Jews from another source. I'm not worried about the Jews. But you are the person who's in the best place at the best time. God put you here for this reason. Esther says, dear Mordechai, I haven't been summoned by the king in 30 days. If I go unsummoned, he's going to kill me. So he says, do you think you will escape the fate of the Jews by being in the king's palace? Because if you remain silent at this time, relief and salvation will come from another source. And you and the house of your father will be lost. And then he says, and who knows, if it's not for just such a time that you reach this royal position, that you are the one. And it's so interesting, and we've spoken about this in our class so many times before. Don't ask what you need, ask what you're needed for. And this is a moment that it presents itself to Esther, where this is what you're needed for. Not what you need, don't think about yourself at this time, ask what you're needed for. And Esther agrees to approach the king. She asks Mordechai to gather all the Jews in Shushan and let them fast for 3 days, and this is the origin of the fast of Esther. After the fast, Esther would put her life in the hands of the king and approach the king. Mordechai agreed to Esther's request, and he gathers the Jews of Shushan, especially the children, 22,000 children, and they fasted and they repented and they prayed to God. After 3 days of fasting, Esther puts on the royal garments. She's accepted into Ahasuerus' chamber by miracle, because she should not have been. And what does she say to the king? She creates a little mystery. And I love this about this female heroine, what she does. She says, he says, dear queen, what can I do for you? I give you anything up to half my kingdom. She says, I'd like to invite the king and Haman to a small feast that I prepared. And so the king and Haman join Esther at this wine feast. Now, the king is he doesn't like mystery. He's like, come on, come on, tell me already. What's going on? What do you want from me? She says, no, I'd appreciate tomorrow if again the king and Haman would join me for a feast. Then I'll tell the king my request. Now, Haman, he leaves the party very proud. I mean, think about it. It's the queen and the king and the Haman. He's all excited. But standing at the king's gate was Mordechai. And he still refused to bow to Haman, and Haman was enraged. When he arrived home, his wife and his wise advisors counseled him that they should put up a gallows and then go to the king and request permission to hang Mordechai. So he now goes and builds a gallows. That night, another fascinating turn of events. That night, the king can't sleep. And so he asks, this is something they did instead of counting sheep, he asks for his royal chronicles to be read. They compile, they open the royal chronicles, and it opens up to an interesting page. How Mordechai saved the king's life when there was two of his secret service, Bigson and Seresh, that hatched a plan, a plot to kill him. So the Achashverosh pipes up and he says, was he ever rewarded? He looks in the chronicles. Yes, he got his name in your chronicles. That was his reward. So I have to reward him. He saved my life. How come we didn't reward him? And it's fascinating. Had he rewarded Mordechai back in the day, it would have been whatever. He would have gotten, you know, a little trinky, a little prize. This is a moment in time. Now, at that moment, think about all of the quote-unquote serendipity in this moment, because this is the turning point of the entire story. Esther, he's now in the middle of mystery with these Esther 2 events. There's no idea what Esther wants from him. He reads randomly because he can't sleep that Mordechai saved his life. And all of a sudden, Haman enters the courtyard. What was his purpose? He wanted, couldn't even wait till the morning. In the middle of the night, he wanted to find the king and ask permission to hang Mordechai. He's so excited because he just finished building the gallows that he can't even wait to hang Mordechai. Achashverosh says, my Haman, I have a question for you. He's like, he's about to say, can I hang Mordechai? He says, Haman, what would you do to a person who the king wishes to honor? Now, Haman is on a high horse. This is about ego. Let's talk about ego for a second. He knows he was him twice, him and the queen and da-da-da. I mean, of course he wants to honor himself. Hey, no, the king has nobody else to honor besides the great Haman. So he said, this is what you should do, thinking about himself. You should bring the royal garments, the king's garments, and a royal horse, and let one of the king's nobles dress the man and lead him on the horse through the streets of Shushan, proclaiming, so shall be done to the man who the king wishes to honor. Achashverosh says, this is a beautiful thing. I love it. Haman, you're the perfect guy for the job. Go get the garments and the horse, and I want you to do this for Mordechai the Jew. What? The guy who I was about to ask you to kill? You want me to honor him? And Haman had no choice but to comply. And the next day, he went and honored Mordechai as the king had ordered, and immediately rushed to join the king and Esther for the second feast. Now, the king is waiting for Esther to say, what is it? What is the second feast? What do you want from me? So Esther says, my dear king, she says, I found favor in your eyes. And if it pleases the king, let my life be granted by my plea, and my life, my people, by my request. For my people and I have been sold to be annihilated, killed, and destroyed. Esther then identifies and says, this is the man who wants to kill my people. And the king says, what are you talking about, your people? Now, another interesting thing happens, and the Midrash says that Achashverosh leaves the room for a minute, and Haman had tripped and fell on Esther's lap. And Ahasuerus thought that Haman was trying to get the queen. And he was with that, and the fact that Esther, all the emotions, and Esther was Jewish, and the whole thing, he was so upset, and he said, he was informed also that Haman had built the gallows for Mordechai, and that is when he ordered Haman to be hanged on that very gallows. And the entire table at this moment, leading up to this crescendo, the entire table is turned. It's an amazing, we call it Vinahapachu. It was literally a complete 180. What was supposed to be the worst day for the Jewish people ended up being the best day for the Jewish people. On that day, Haman's estate was given to Esther. Mordechai was appointed prime minister in Haman's stead. Esther was far from satisfied. Haman was dead, but the evil decree was still in effect. And according to Persian law, once the king issues a decree, it can't be rescinded. But the king gave Mordechai and Esther permission that they promptly write up a decree that countermanded Haman's edict. And the decree granted Jews permission to defend themselves completely against their enemies. And by this time, considering that everyone knew the queen and the prime minister were both Jewish, most people were not going to start messing with the Jews. And it just changed and became a celebration from that day on, a beautiful celebration that doesn't make any sense according to the laws of nature. But because of this beautiful series of events that we call Ashkacha Pratit, divine providence, as a result, the Jewish people were saved. And the 13th of Adar that year, the Jewish people throughout Persia mobilized and killed their enemies that wanted to kill them. They hanged Haman's 10 sons. And Esther asked the king for permission for the Jews of Shushan to have one more day to destroy their enemy. And on the 14th of Adar, the Jews worldwide celebrated. The Jews of Shushan ended up celebrating the 15th of Adar, and that's why it's called Shushan Purim. The day after Purim is called Shushan Purim. And this became a beautiful, beautiful holiday from that day forward, a holiday of which we do a number of things. We read a beautiful Megillah, a scroll that was written by Esther and Mordechai, called the Scroll of Esther. And that scroll does not have God's name in it because God was hidden during this time. So we read it both in the evening, Saturday night, and we read it Sunday morning. And then on Sunday, we have three other special mitzvot. The first mitzvah is to give two ready-made foods to one person, called Mishloach Manot, to give two ready-made foods, to eat a feast of celebration that includes wine and meat. If you're vegetarian, then you can, but generally will include wine and meat, and to give enough for a meal to two impoverished people. And for those of you, the hardest of those four mitzvahs is to find somebody who would be classified as impoverished to be able to give a meal to them, or the amount of money for a meal for them. It's supposed to be money, actually, that is given to them. And so I have 22 people or families that I've identified that halachically would fall under this category. And so if anyone needs me to give on their behalf, I'm happy to do that. And I sent out a link, but I can send you a link. And if you want me to do that, and I do that mitzvah for you on Purim. So that mitzvah is covered. The other mitzvahs you're going to have to do yourself. I can't do them for you. So that is the story, the basic story of Purim. And what's beautiful is the postscript is that Ahasuerus and Esther have a child. And his name is Darius II. And he ends up taking over the throne. And from the time of Purim, for the next 34 years, it is the most peaceful, most beautiful time for the Jewish people, as Esther's son, a Jewish boy, becomes the king of Persia and Media. And later on, there's a whole other story. Maybe one day we're going to have to go through Jewish history, I think, in this class and give you like a real idea. But this is a beautiful, the story of Purim lasted 9 years. The whole thing, from the beginning of Ahasuerus' feast and ascending to the throne until Ahasuerus, until this whole story happens with Haman and Haman is killed. It's a 9-year story, just to give you the amount of time it lasted. I know I'm sure you have a lot of questions on this. We'll see how many we can cover during this time. But for now, I will turn the recording off and we'll go to questions. Hi, Rabbi Bernath here. I have some great news for you. My popular 4-week course, Kabbalah for Everyone, is available right now for free for the next 50 people who download it. All you have to do is go to www.theloverabbi.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and you're going to see the download button right there. In this course, I talk about the Kabbalistic secrets to relationships, to wealth, to happiness, and balance. This special offer has been dedicated in loving memory of Ellie Dorfman. I look forward to hearing from you and hope you enjoy the course. Now on to today's episode.